Welcome to the Race Riding Podcast, guys. I'm Nikki T.
I'm Kurt Hozon.
And we're here today with the Drop Times. Thank you all so much for coming out.
Of course.
Thanks for having us. Yeah,
absolutely. For those that are listening audio only, why don't you guys introduce yourselves so they can tie the name to the sound?
My name is Kenneth Connor Arthur.
Damn, that's a cool name.
Oh, thank you. From small town Uvalde, Texas.
I'm Dylan Sampson from Marietta, Oklahoma.
I want to talk to Samson.
I'm Johnny Sheets. I'm from Prairieville, Louisiana.
Happy birthday, Johnny.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So you guys are in town for Americana Fest week. You have the show at the Exit Inn, which by the time this comes out will already be happened.
But you guys have already crushed it.
Yeah. But we also got a chance to have you guys come out and pop up for our Outside the Round show, which we are super thankful for you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
I got introduced to your music through a guy, Gold Town Music. He does like some artist management. He works with the Lowdown Drifters and does like show posters. Mm. And he sent me your stuff, and I was just like, "Holy shit! How have I not known about this before?"
Right on.
One of the things that we talk about, and I actually chatted with my buddy Andrew that works over at CAA, was like, now when if someone finds you now, you guys have a catalog of great music already, stuff that you can go back to and kind of hear sonically what you're doing and. Like what you guys have kind of been drawing up for the band for the past couple of years. It's very powerful. Honestly, in my opinion, some of the most powerful things that is coming out of just the music scene that lives in our world, which is like rock, Americana, you know, Texas, you know, mainstream country, all of that. It's distinct sounding, and it is stuff that earworms me so that I listen to it over and over and over again, which...
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yeah. What do you guys, when you guys started the band, like, was there any influences or anything that you were steering towards or just kind of figuring out how it was going from there?
I don't know, man. You know, I've always enjoyed, you know, the writing process and I don't know. I mean, I grew up at the foot of a stage and I couldn't directly say, you know, like one major influence, but yeah, it's hard to nail it all down. I mean, the Red Dirt scene for sure, the early Red Dirt scene of like the 1990s, you know, Great Divide. Yeah. I loved Mike McClure's songwriting. I probably say as a songwriter, he's probably my biggest influence. Just wordplay and yeah. Like you're saying, enough to where the song is layered. You can go back and listen to it and get a different perspective on it or something like that. But now the way that we go is even with that first EP, I tried to make it a genre bending experience, and to the point to where if it went this way, then it'd go that way, and then that's just the way it is now. It's like we write songs that we want to hear. If I want to write in like a 1990s pop song, then we're gonna do it, or Kill Yourself country tune, we're gonna do that. Or like a bluegrass kind of you know fusion, we'll throw that in there. So. No, I like having, you know, five different genres all within the same EP or album or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Just, again, music that we want to hear.
Yeah. I think that's kind of, for me, what makes it stand out is when you listen to, even on an EP or a project, but definitely over the span of what you guys have out, it's a journey. You know, it's going all over the place. And you kind of we even got to see that in the live set that we got, you know, which I'm sure isn't your full live set, but it's a journey. And there's so many moments where lyrically or sonically, it just forces the crowd to pay attention, even if they're not trying to, which I think is super powerful and something that I don't think a ton of bands have all the time, right? Like you'll hear a lot of bands that sonically, very similar throughout the whole process.
Yeah, we noticed that.
Yeah.
Since we've been in town, you know, there's been a lot of kind of quote unquote, y'all call them writers rounds. We call them song swaps.
Yeah.
You know, in Texas. But we noticed that when we got here. It's like, man, all these guys are kind of saying the same thing. They kind of all sound the same.
Yeah.
When we go into the rehearsal room to write something, like there's no really preconceived notion. You know, it's like, dynamic is a big thing for us.
Yeah.
You know, like a bands that we listen to are real heavily dynamic driven, you know, as far as the music goes. And then, you know, we kind of just play off what Connor, you know, comes up with. And And we're still, I mean, what, the other day we were in the rehearsal room, we wrote three new songs, and none of them sound anything like,
you know, anything we've done so far.
That's cool. Great, though. I mean, it's, and that's what we love. I mean, you know, Connor mentioned The Great Divide, Mike McClure. You know, growing up in Oklahoma, that was, you know, for lack of a better term, God for us.
Yeah.
It was this guy that, you know, has this kind of mystique about him. Do y'all know anything about Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to it, but I don't know the history.
I literally know nothing about it.
Yeah, he's a really, really interesting character from South Central Oklahoma. He had a studio called the Boo Hatch in Ada, Oklahoma, which was in his basement. And that's where, like, Turnpike recorded their early stuff, John Fulbright. A lot of those heralded Oklahoma songwriters, they all were from his kind of spiderweb.
Camp,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And we were just drawn to that. And still, I mean, if you're in the van with us going down the road, like, everything we listen to is very dynamic driven. Because, like you said, it kind of provokes that...
Response,
and like you said, during the live show, those peaks and valleys that we play off of, you know, there's not really a moment for you to zone out and be like, I'm gonna go get a beer. It's like, we want to keep you there.
Yeah, and then even with a full set, you know, you go look at someone else's set list and they're playing 10 songs in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
We're playing 30.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And it's back to back to back to back to back.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to, you know, make it as streamlined as possible. Sometimes with all the key changes and stuff, we get a little hung up. But, yeah, that's the main thing, is just rapid fire and letting the songs do the work.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to – I don't think we'll ever be the band that's going to do, like, pyrotechnics and you know, shaking my ass and stuff like that.
No.
At least not on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, every now and then I'll get a little wiggle to me and whatnot.
And another thing, too, about us, like, we don't go in to write a song and go, it's got to be 3.5 minutes. It's got to be this. It's got to have a bridge. It's got to have that. It's like, man, we've got some minute and a half songs. We've got some 2-minute songs. It's like, if we can get the message across in 2 minutes, there's no sense in dragging it on.
Yeah.
We'll just roll into another one, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of our thinking, too, is like, there's no rules to this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's good and we enjoy it, send it.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that too, because it's, you know, being in Nashville, there's some formulas, right? And they work for a lot of people,
right.
But it sonically becomes cloudy, right? Where your guys' stuff is very much, when you hear it, A, you know it's you, right? If you know you guys as a band, you know it's you. It sounds, even though it's all over the place a little bit genre wise, you hear it and you know it's the Drunk Tines, which I think is powerful.
That's a real important thing too, is that there's a vernacular and somehow tethers it all together, even though there could be a drastic change in attitude with the song. But
yeah,
I'm happy about it. And I think, you know, again, when listening to, you know, bands like Joe Walsh or even Mike McClure, and there's this certain vernacular that allows this impunity for them to write what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So when I sat down, I not only inherited that, but I wanted to take it a little step further.
Yeah.
And the reason why, I mean, these dudes are badasses, you know, mm-hmm. like they still are, but and it's because they lived their shit. You know, you can't say that kind of stuff. You can't talk about that topic or that if you don't have the scars to prove it.
Yeah.
You know, and I roll around in the mud quite a bit. You know, I'm not a musician first. I'm not a songwriter first. I'm a piece of shit outlaw, you know, that gets in trouble quite a bit, and I can't help it. That's what I like to do. You know, I don't hunt. I poach. You know, I don't know. I just it's a collection of experiences, and lucky to have a forum to you know, express it, share them.
Yeah,
brought them down with you know, I like that word, impunity. I'm just say whatever fuck I want.
I honestly. I love that. And like, for it comes to mind, like New Girl, right?
Yeah.
So you hear the first lines of that song, and if you don't know who you are, you're immediately paying attention.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, it, but it's not cheesy or corny either. It's real.
It's a love song.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's just, it's a twist on a love song, yeah, you know?
For sure.
But one of those things where something that hits you in the mouth as soon as you hear it. And sometimes with you guys, it's a key change in a set, or sometimes it's like the initial lyrics of the song, or sometimes it's where the song just develops as it goes. But it is striking, and that's, I think, what draws me back to it as a listener since I found it, like, over and over and over again. Because I'm one of those people that find something, and I'm like, man, I love this. And then I, like, dig deeper. So, like, when I found Turnpike in 2015, we kind of stumbled into a Turnpike show in Chicago. I didn't know who they were. Mm. And we saw that they were playing at Joe's on Weed Street. And then I dug into listening to them before we were there, and I was like, oh, crap, you know?
Yeah.
And it just, it opened up a different thing in my brain. Their music is diverse sonically, a little bit tighter than what your guys is in terms of sounds more similar, but the lyrics also are very expressive. And I would say you have that same thing for me as a listener of, like, the words that you put into your songs make me pay attention and make me think about it. I appreciate that, man.
And I remember the first time I saw Turnpike. It was in my hometown in Konkan. There's a big festival going on. And I showed up a little bit high on Reggie Dirtweed.
Yeah.
I was there for about 5 minutes. And I was like, dude, I got to go back home and start writing. It blew me away. You know, I think they were playing Long Hot Summer Day or something like that. I was like, all right, I got to go home. Went back to my shed, started playing banjo all night. You know, I was just like, I got to that was insane. But shit, not maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes sitting there in the crowd. It's like, all right, something just changed. You know, like the whole industry after that kind of became, you know, chasing that Turnpike sound or just feel.
Yeah.
You know, they were pretty, that was a chapter turner right there.
Yeah.
So I grew up about an hour from Evan in southern Oklahoma.
Yep.
So I was lucky enough to kind of grow up in my formative years while they were coming up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the first times I ever saw them, this was in the Heritage Hall in Ardmore, Oklahoma. The lineup was, first show of the night was Whiskey Myers on the bill. Second was Turnpike. And then the headliner was Stoney LaRue.
Wow.
So I got to see those guys play for 20 people, you know.
Yeah.
Coming up. And being from that part of Oklahoma, all those towns he names, all that vernacular and scenery, talking about Wine and Stair Mountain, like that's where I was from. So it really grabbed me in my high school years. And it's like this dude is onto something, you know.
Yeah.
And they're still one of my favorite bands.
Yeah. Same. Yeah, it's, and the same thing with them. It's like you hear it and you know it's Turnpike and it's distinct, but it also, the expressiveness that he uses in songs, you know, with his vocal, you can't look away, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they mix, you know, that's one thing that I noticed because I grew up playing a lot of bluegrass music in my youth, kind of hearing them in the way that they mixed like that bluegrass rhythm with, you know, like the kind of takeoff rock telly guitar and that blistering fiddle
drum beat
you know, the kind of real in your face train beat in some songs. It was just like everything, there was nothing subtle about what each guy was doing, but the way it all came together, it was like, you know, familiar.
Yeah,
you know.
And talking about another badass too, I mean, James Murtry.
Yeah, James,
you know, we listen to him a lot.
Yeah.
And again, just cock dropping music, just like, here it is. But with all those things that I mentioned, I'd say the most, you know, moving around stage probably Mike McClure.
Yeah.
But Turnpike, you don't have to have any bells and whistles.
Right.
Because you're there for the song. James McMurtry stands up there like an oak tree.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't move. He's just sitting there gritting. But like when you're sitting there watching it, you're looking at his face. And like, so then you could have these little subtle micro expressions and you're like, oh, now, you know, he just changed. And now it's you don't have to, you know, do all the goofy, throw your guitar around. And man, I see that type of stuff. I go, oh, dude, I don't want to write you off, but I just kind of did, you know, even if the song is good. But no, I think everything that we've mentioned so far, as far as our influences, everybody's kind of just letting the songs do the work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's with the stuff that we love and the stuff that we try to write, the song is the most important part. I mean, we do take a lot of pride in our dynamic and our musical ability, but it's the song, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's ever going to change. I mean, that's something that, first and foremost, like if we don't dig it, and if all of us don't look at each other and go, yeah, that's pretty cool. We're never going to send something to appease the masses. You know, that's just not our vibe. We'd rather stick around playing 300 cap rooms in Texas, honestly. If that's, you know, like James McMurtry. I mean, that dude, I mean, he bangs around Texas. He's got a loyal following. He's a legend. I mean, that dude is to me, the pinnacle of songwriting and musicality. Like that whole package, when I think of that, I think of James McMurtry. I think of Mike McClure.
Yeah.
You know. And there's a few other bands that we really dig, but as far as that vibe and family of songs first, lyrics first, with badass tones and guitars, like that's it for us.
It's a real unique perspective and sentiment
too. Yeah. And also kind of genre bending. I mean, McClure, he does it way more than McMurtry, but McMurtry, like that last album he put out, in my opinion, that's the best album he's had, you know?
Yeah.
And he's what, 60 now?
No, I'd say maybe a little more than that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like that dude's getting better, like with age. He's like a fine wine. Yeah. Know?
Well, a real songwriter and someone that is crafting music can do that and does do that. Yeah. You know, you'll hear some of the songwriters in town that, you know, we'll get to catch every once in a while at a writer's round, and they'll play a new song, and I'm like, that's probably better than all those number ones they had. Yeah, you know, if you're really doing it as a craft, and you're trying to craft the music, both lyrically as well as sonically, it's going to work. And for me, having gotten to see you for the first time, the song spoke for themselves over the fucking phone speaker, right? Which also is something, right? Because until someone gets to see you live, which was awesome, by the way, but until someone gets to see you live, that song or that video, maybe if they're watching on YouTube or something like that, is doing the work. It's doing the heavy lifting. So the songs themselves, I hear things that I don't know as a guy that doesn't make music, just a kind of music fan. I don't know exactly what's happening, but I know I can't stop listening to it. And for me, that's the stuff that kind of drives me back to an artist, or that I hear it popping from the wall of other things that I hear. And the greats, I actually got to see McMurtry in a 150 cap room in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Oh, cool. Super cool, and just like you said, he's up on stage. He's just him.
You know? His teeth.
Yeah,
yeah. It's cool to watch.
Yeah,
you don't want to take your eyes off of it. Mm-hmm. So it's. I mean, I remember the first time I saw him live. It was at Flores Country Store, and he was a three piece, and he came out and he started doing Red Dress, and I was like, son of a bitch, that song is slick, dude. Like, yes, I'm drunk. Damn, you're ugly.
Yep.
I tell you one thing. Yes, I will. Dude, it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, or like Turtle Bayou when he starts that riff. I mean, and that's why we're not afraid to just hop up as a three piece. It's like James McMurtry does it.
Yeah, he's better guitar player than me.
But no, I mean, man, any situation, we're pretty malleable. We can adapt. Like tomorrow night, you'll see us with a five piece.
Yeah.
Like we'll have a lead guitar, a keys player.
Sick.
But we just went on a 50-day run of the Pacific Northwest, and we played 90% of those shows as a three-piece.
It was cool. Like, I expected a four-piece, of course. I didn't realize that the guitar player was, of course, busy having a child.
You know,
well, his wife or whoever. But
no, I mean, dude, honestly, the drop time started as a two-piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Started with Connor and our friend Colt Wrangler doing just a guitar and a drum set. And then I came into the fold, and we were a three-piece for about a year. And then Tyler came in the fold, and we were four-piece. So, I mean, we're not afraid to do any of that shit.
Yeah. I remember there was a band that I loved from the 90s, Local H. It's a two-piece.
Mm.
And I got to see them in Chicago when I was in college. And just watching that much sound come out of a two-piece is wild.
He's good. You got to thrash, dude.
Yeah, you got to get after it.
Yeah. I do love a good bass player, though.
Yeah,
like,
sure. Yeah.
It's nice having a good bass player.
Yes.
it's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, like, I saw that a lot. And when we were, because I'm not a gearhead by any means.
Same.
I like to keep it pretty Stevie Ray, you know, just amp and maybe an overdrive and a tuner. That's what I have. But when we were a two-piece, me and a drummer, I was like sitting there and I was like, okay, then I'm going to run this octave thing down here to get a bass. I was like, dude, I'm not doing any of that. it just sounds like more steps for me to fuck up, you know? So, no, I'm not doing that. No.
There are some folks that do it, like Cadillac 3, like their bass player is like their steel guitar player.
Yeah.
And he's got a lap steel guitar and he's got two volume pedals. And so when he wants to play lap steel, he turns one volume up, and then other times he's just playing bass with like this. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty unique. Yeah. But it's still like he'll play his actual bass too.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's swampy and muddy and it sounds unique. That's another, like, it's one of my favorite bands. This is Cadillac 3. We used to, before I lived in Nashville, we would, if they were around Ohio or Western Pennsylvania, I would chase them for a weekend. We'd go see three shows.
What other bands that are y'all looking forward to hearing this week?
At Americana Fest?
Yeah.
We're not even at most of the events, no, honestly. Yeah.
I'm playing tonight at a writer's round, and I don't even know any of the folks that I'm playing with. And then Julie Kate was like, oh, this is going to be such a legendary night. So I'll figure out when I get there, I guess. But
hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you guys are playing tomorrow night, so, or have played when this comes out, but that'll be sick. Exiton's a fun spot.
Yeah.
We played there last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he's playing this week, but have you guys heard Gabe Lee?
Yeah, we just did a thing with Gabe.
He's so good.
Yeah. What was that? Whiskey Jam.
Yeah. Dude, I love Gabe so much. Just sonically, and he's a dude that you see and you don't expect the voice that comes out of him to come out of the package.
Yeah. There's some killer harmonies going on.
Okay. I know you talk about now.
He had a chick playing dobro with him.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Really good.
It's really, really good. And she would tour with him when he was doing like his first runs of shows and stuff. And then they've done some like songs together as well with another part.
Right on. Yeah, she was sick.
Gabe is one of my favorite people. And it's his first record was so sparse with instruments that it really let the songs work for him, and then it got heavier and he kind of changed it up and, you know, did a little bit of exploration with the sound, but he's one of my absolute favorite people. I've been a fan of his since that first record came out, and I was like, where the fuck did this guy come from? Because in Nashville, like, we get to hear it before it's here, you know,
right.
In Nashville, right? Whereas I'm sure it's the same thing in rooms in Oklahoma and Texas, right? But Gabe kind of like came out of the writing room and already had just big
catalogs.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. For himself, you know, like stuff that we hadn't heard, but was electric, you know? So I'm a big fan of him. Someone else that we've been trying to get to town is Grady Spencer and The Work.
They're good friends of ours.
Yeah. I love their sound sonically as well. It's for like, sure. It's enough Americana and enough rock to like scratch both of my itches. It's
also got like this. I'm not reggae, but a little like of a...
Yeah, there's a tinge of that kind of backbeat, bluesy thing that they throw in there. Man,
like
those
a second guys, line kind of Louisiana feel? Or?
Well, not necessarily. It's more of like a... I don't know. It's hard to describe, but they mix genres really well, too.
Yeah.
When we first started, quote-unquote, touring, they kind of took us under their wing and let us open a bunch of shows. So those guys have been really, really big for us.
Why the... air quotes there.
Well, you know, COVID kind of stunted our growth in the early days. So that's why I say, like, the band started in 2019, but we actually started hitting it in, like, 2021.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, we came out with the EP 3 months before everything got shut down.
Yeah. You're like, great timing.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, it's just... Yeah, put a real big damper on everything.
Yeah, and then during COVID, we recorded an EP called Four More. And that's the one that really kind of put us, like I said, on the map. It's
relatively.
Relatively. I mean, still, like, in our top songs on Spotify, those songs are consistently in our top.
Yeah.
You know, the Four More EP was kind of the one that, you know, gave us that opportunity to start branching out and touring. So.
I think that's an important part too, that is when you put something out and it gets a spark, you're like, okay, now we can keep exploring, doing that thing.
Well, it's just wild to me. I go through some of these things. I probably shouldn't look at the analytics as much, but it's like songs that I thought or expected that would be, you know, they're not. You know, it's and Bill of Sale, which is a number one that we have by leaps and bounds, that was supposed to start off, that song was going to be an intro for another song we have called Tarantino. Dude, what a bad idea that would have been had that been the case, you know. And I've got to thank David Beck for that, because David was like, no, this is a whole ass song. And I was like, okay, give me 5 minutes and I'll finish it. And I mean, all of that stuff came together real fast. I just had this, you know, idea to kind of pick up the rhythm within a song.
Yeah.
And write with my, you know, Episcopalian background. And I think that's it can be considered a cheap trick when it comes to songwriting, to kind of, you know, reference the Bible.
Yeah.
Because you can't really, I mean, who's going to argue with that? It's right. Like, this stuff's already written, dude.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, using that verbiage and stuff, you know, just knocked that song out, and it's been doing well. The sound's great. Tyler did great with the harmonica. And I'm glad that song is doing well, because it's mature, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be 60 years old talking about, you know, my dick getting hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, moving forward, we're not going to be as, I'm going to find more creative ways, like you said, to grip somebody.
Yeah.
You know, but, and then there's tons of ways to do it. But, one of my favorite songs we did, Easier Not To.
Yeah. I love that.
You know, it's like, again, talk about like a love song taken a little bit too far. It's like, yeah, I love you, babe. I know your blood type. I know your sleeping habits. I've never met you. But yeah. You know, I know that Larry's being a dick at work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw that. I'm watching. If you want me to do something about it, I will.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the things where the first time you listen to it, you might not pick that
up. No, you don't.
Right.
But then there's one dead giveaway. And I see like moms that, you know, that listen to my music. They're in Congo and they're singing all this stuff. Yvonne Davenport, that's her favorite song. Yeah. She has no idea. There's a line and then she sings it. She goes, and I see her through a hole in the wall that I made. That's like straight up American Psycho stuff. Yeah. She's
like
not
Porky's
getting
when
it.
When they looked in the shower and that Porky scene.
Yeah.
Or whatever,
yeah.
You know?
It's like, I don't know how you're not getting that.
But it's kind of great that they're not.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? Man, I miss a lot of stuff in my favorite songs.
Right,
you know, I'm like, I don't even know what the song's about.
Yeah.
And I just still like it.
Yeah.
I don't, my brain doesn't work that good sometimes.
Well, no, that happens to me all the time. I'll listen to a song, I think I know it, and then somebody tells me, he's like, no, it's about, I'm like, whoa.
Yes.
You know, geez, I never thought about it that way. And they're like, yeah, idiot. I was like, dude, don't start.
Yeah.
And that's honestly some of my favorite songwriters, like James McMurtry. You can listen to his stuff 1,000 times, and every time it's like a Coen Brothers film. It's like, oh, I didn't
hear yeah.
that. Pick up that part
yeah,
of it.
You, yeah, you pick up something else.
Intentional brushstrokes, man.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I like.
Absolutely.
That's a great way to talk about that, too, because mm-hmm. hearing that from you makes that even make more sense. It's like you're curating that song
yeah.
with how the story is going. And that's what makes country music is a story,
mm-hmm.
right? Through all of the songs, you know, whether they're pop country or the hardest Americana there is, the story is what is the thing that makes it country, in my opinion,
yeah.
genre-wise.
I think the biggest distinction between, like, Americana and country is that Americana, the stories don't have to be so, like, wit-based or word-played.
Yeah.
And country has become, you know, synonymous with, like, you know, she's acting single, so I'm drinking double. You know,
yep.
these little just wordplay mm-hmm. things and like the honky-tonk type of, you know, approach. that's country. Now we're dealing with the pop country now stuff, which is very, very dependent on cute little wordplay. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, I think the closest that we did that with Honky Tonk is Things I Ain't Got.
Yeah.
You know, this makes me grateful for the things I ain't got, you know. But obviously there's some, you know, little evil in there. You gotta talk about slapping somebody's ass and all that other stuff.
That's probably our biggest foray into country.
Yeah, honky tonk.
There's Things I Ain't Got.
But yeah, I knew that going into it. I was like, well, then we're gonna have to spank it. We're gonna have to make it bad, you know, in a good way.
Keeps it rock.
Yeah.
That edge.
Yeah.
That's how I like my women. I like everything with an edge on it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like a safe bed on any.
You like your tea with a little vodka in it. There you go.
Cheers. Yeah, I pissed the bed last night.
Yeah,
but no, that's been.
You'll get that on these big jobs. Yeah. Here. Yep.
No, I definitely. I mean, I physically.
You did. Yeah. There you go.
Air mattress too.
Speaking.
That's good. You can just throw it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's waterproof.
The sheets weren't plastic though. So.
Yeah. Oh boy,
those got to go.
Yeah. Time for a new pair of sheets. But that's a. One of the things in music that makes it have mass appeal is layers. And your guys' stuff is as layered as anything I've heard coming out in the last 10 years, you know, which I think is what draws my brain where I listen to a lot of music. Mm-hmm. That's what draws my brain to it when I hear it.
So repeatability.
Yeah. Kinda. Yeah. You have some of the same things that like you talk about like 90s rock and stuff like that. Like some of the things that I'd heard in like Matchbox 20 and shit that makes me want to listen to it 15 times straight. These songs have too, even though they're talking about a little bit crazy shit.
Right.
I mean, but that draws me back even more too, is paying attention to the layers.
Yeah. I mean, you can't ignore the, what makes us like a song, like a good song. You gotta have audibility. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the vessel that's carrying the lyrics.
Yeah.
And shit, one of my favorite fucking bands of all time, Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah.
I love those guys. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's like if I'm going to write one song, I need to write three songs. And if I put three songs into one song, then, you know, that like little trifecta, shit, it might as well be 1,000 depending upon the listener, because you're having all these things that are kind of going against each other. I don't want it to be like so vague that nothing gets done. I don't like that type of songwriting. I think it's cheap when you just try to overwhelm the listener and make it seem like you're really smart by dumping word salad.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's bullshit. And I wish that people would understand that when they go, whoa, it's so deep. It's like, no, it's not. It's fucking garbage. And it's people like you that are, you know, suspending this. And it's just, it's not smart. It's not put together. And I implore people to just, if you like this guy so much, you like this song so much, print it out and read it. Read it to a class of kindergartners. And they're going to tell you that it's complete and utter word salad. And it's not smart. And it's, again, cheap tactic in order to make the listener feel like you're smarter than they are. And the song's not actually getting done. You're not saying anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say any direct examples.
I'll say that's like, I always talk about Tool. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like Tool.
Yeah.
I do like Tool.
I don't know what the fuck they're saying at all.
There's a lot. I mean, there's some Bob Dylan songs, you know, that are just vague, and I'm sure he'd admit that. And then the problem with that is then he comes out with a heater.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. So then you go back to the other ones. You're like, well, am I missing something? It's like, no, I promise you, you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, this one was just, I was high.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, I don't want to get too into the weeds on this, but, you know, we spend a lot of time on the road. And when we listen to all the shit we love 1,000 times, it's like, man, let's bump something else on, you know? And we have put stuff on that is massive. People are posting it, and they're like, it's the greatest song I've ever heard. It's like, all right, let's give it a try. Let's see what the hype is.
Yeah, you got a little, you know, listen, you know, a little.
And like I said, I don't want to name any names, but there's been more examples of one where we're sitting there and we're just like,
scared.
I do not get
No, it scares the shit out of me.
This is so massive. You know, I'm pretty good about giving everything its chance. I mean, like, okay, I can see why this. I can see why that. But it seems like in the last year, there's been more examples of stuff that's, like, poorly produced. Like you said, just word salad, just acoustic guitar and, like, some tambourine. And it's like, what? What am I missing here?
Yeah.
You know?
It's like an inside joke you're not a part of.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously, it's like...
I feel like I fucking stumbled into the wrong world, like universe, dude. It's scary because then when you go from like this all this hype-based TikTok music, you know, that where the cart is so far in front of the horse. It's like you'd rather be seen than your song be heard. You have these kids or musicians, if you want to call them musicians, songwriters, influencers is probably be the most correct term, is what they are.
Concept creator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They don't know what the road's like. They don't know how to put a band together. They don't know the technicalities of all of it. So then you're going to see, and we're already seeing it, a steep decline of production when it comes to putting songs together. The audience is going to associate that with quality. And so everything is just going to start falling apart. You know, no one cares about good food anymore type of shit.
Yeah. It's definitely interesting being here because previously I wasn't in Nashville. So I had a little bit of a different ear, you know?
Yeah.
Because I could have access to your guys' music as fast as I had access to anything in that world. And then you're also here, you hear like trends in songwriting, like, or, you know, stuff that people are kind of steering towards a little bit before you'll hear it on a radio or you'll hear it on releases even. But it is muddy here. And just in music in general, mm-hmm. the amount of people putting out songs is wild, yeah. right? On any given week, the amount of items that crosses my desk/algorithm on Spotify is wild. Right, there's just so much music. So one of the things of that is how do you craft it so that it's indelible, so that it'll last past this year, this next year, you know, maybe something that someone's listening to and talking about, like you guys are talking about James, right, like how can you be that for that next tier of kids that are really trying to do this as an art?
Well, I think it comes down to one major question, and are you doing this because you want the effects, or are you doing it because you want to make an effect? Mm-hmm. I want to make a dent in this shit, right? I don't give a fuck if I'm broke for the rest of my life. I never had a problem getting attention from women anyway, you know? Before this started, I'm charming, you know, I've got these beautiful blue eyes, but
true.
I mean, everyone here, you know, we want to make a mark on it, mm-hmm. but you know, then the other side is like, oh, I want the money. I want to get, so they like just throw out these songs and then, or they'll do what's trending or what it's like. Well, dude, good luck.
Yeah.
Because right now we're dealing with the, you know, one hit wonder equivalent right now with this internet TikTok upsurge. Yeah. And I see it all the time. And it's like, what happened to that one chick with, if I were a fish and you caught me, you said, look at that fish. Remember that song? It was all crazy on the internet last year. I bet she's in a padded room right now, dude.
Yeah.
You know, poor thing.
Well, I talk to people about that too. Because people think I know more than I know. I don't know shit, right? Like, I'm just a guy that likes music, but
yeah.
I know more than some people, but not more than most people that really fucking do it, you know? But they'll ask me for advice, and I'm like, you got to hit the road. Yeah. Not just acoustic. You got to hit the road full band.
Yeah.
Because there's something to watching someone fucking destroy a room when there's 15 people in it, right? And that's the thing that is going to make it so that when you're in front of 3,000 people, 30,000 people, whatever it gets to, that you're not going to fucking blink.
Yeah.
You know, because if you can play to 15 people, you can play to 3,000.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, dude, we did that on this last tour. We went and played in Lawrence, Kansas at the Bottleneck for 20 people, and every one of those people bought merch, and they were, I mean, it was a Wednesday night. It was a routing gig.
Yeah.
We didn't expect much out of it, but we showed up and fucking played our ass off. And I guarantee you those 20 people are going to be there next time.
Yeah.
And they're going to bring their friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's one thing about us. We don't shy away from showing up and playing anywhere for anybody. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if there's generator buzz right behind a flatbed trailer, like, we're gonna fucking do it. You know, and we're road dogs, man. Like, Friday night we play in Athens, Georgia. Then we deadhead across America to Fort Collins, Colorado, you know.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
We don't rely on the Spotify. I mean, Spotify is nice. That's probably the one that we've had the most
traction
from, but like TikTok, we've got like 10 videos on TikTok.
We never really had like a quote-unquote viral moment.
No.
Yeah.
Because I'm not pursuing that either. Right. I feel like that's vain, you know?
It's weird. Like, if you're looking, like you're talking about looking at numbers on songs, it's fucking weirder looking at numbers on videos.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
And it's posted for everyone else to look at, too.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, like you know, from... I wish that there was someone else doing it for me or whatever, you know? Like,
yeah.
But I'm not going to be the guy that gets on my phone and be like, hey, guys, it's Connor here from the Drop Time. You know, yeah. We'll see you tomorrow night at Exit In, right? You know, I'm not doing that shit.
Yeah.
This makes me feel goofy.
Yeah.
Unless I'm actually doing it like that, like an asshole.
Yeah. You
know? Like on the back, like, and then like he zooms out, I'm actually taking a shit or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're just.
Are we done? Johnny, toilet paper now. Happy birthday.
Yeah, we're not that band. We're never going to be that band. We're going to let the music speak, the live show speak, and all that other shit will either come as it does, or if it doesn't, we don't. I mean, the bands we love, we look up to, they didn't do any of that shit.
I was just thinking, what if Led Zeppelin had a TikTok?
Yeah.
If Robert Plant is like, hey guys, we're playing Wembley tomorrow, and then...
Yeah.
There's just some things that shouldn't be seen, like robs the mystique or whatever.
Right.
And it almost, man, it likens itself to like where I think of like the kids, I mean, like growing up, you know, have a little webcam and playing.
Yeah.
It's like, man, these kids are little nerds, you know? Like, he's got all these people now that are like, you know, just, again, cheaply recorded stuff. At least the stuff that we put out, like, we have, I can talk about the production, videographers who get paid to do that type of thing and to make a quality video. I wonder if they're scared about their, you know, like, yeah.
Because
everybody's just flipping a phone and then, again, people get used to it and they don't. Like, I wonder if they think our videos are bad compared to...
Well, the weird thing is they are just looking at that number that's at the bottom.
Right, right, right.
Which is such a fucking weird thing.
Yeah, it's hype-based stuff. Well, now, too, it's crazy because more of these social media venture. I mean, they're doing like a pay-to-play type of...
That's how it works.
Yeah, where you can pay them money, they can guarantee you a little more hearts. Crazy, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I worked at a record label for a year and a half, and that's when I was like, oh, this is how they make the fucking
donuts. Got
some
fucking Illuminati stuff in the background.
Well, they wouldn't teach me that, but yeah. I caught little pieces of it. I'm like, oh, that's how it works, you know?
Man, we've never done any of that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I've killed a couple goats in effigy, but...
Yeah, you know, sacrifice a duende here and there. Yeah. Not that big a deal.
Ethical voodoo.
Yeah, ethical voodoo, baby.
That's why we keep the Cajun in the band.
Yeah. Gotta have one. But... that's one of the things, like, when I talk to people, I'm like, well, you have a couple ways you can go. You can hit the fucking road and you can play your songs to as many people that will listen in each room. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's tried and true. That's what people have been doing since music started. Yeah. Fucking bards and, you know, and whatever eating place they could get into, right. You know, since those times. Or you can fucking do social media and hope for a pop. But the key with, if you do that, is you better have the shit behind it to make it work, right? And that's the difference, like, between a one-hit wonder before was a record label signed up, put a song to radio that was great, and then there was nothing to follow, right? That's what it looked like before. Now it's person puts out song, the internet takes it, it does the thing, but it's where do you go from there? How do you have a body of work that will keep people there, right? Mm-hmm. And so... 100 ways to discover bands. My favorite is one of my buddies that I love the stuff that he loves sending me something, you know? And it's like, that's your buddy saying, hey, I went through and researched this for us, you know, here it is. Right. That's easier to do with the internet. Right. Cause realistically, if there was no streaming services and no social media, I probably would have never found you guys being originally from Western Pennsylvania. So that's the good part.
Yeah.
But the bad part is that if it hits, and even if it's a great song, if they don't know how to interact with people, they don't have a team behind them that's helping, they don't know how to write more good songs, they're fucked, you know? And that's, there has to be some structure behind it. So that's why when I come across a band from a buddy that I respect the shit out of musically, sends it to me and I see the body of work, I'm like, oh, not only is this cool as fuck and it's different and it stands out, but if you've done fucking 20 songs that all sound great, I'm trusting that you got 20 more in the tank, you know? So that's one of the things why I think it's cool. Road dog life also makes you willing to go with the ups and downs. This thing is that. It's fucking chaos, man. You know?
Yes, especially now.
Yeah, it's chaos. But if you can be on the road together in a fucking van with four of your buddies or three of your buddies or whatever it is and not kill each other, you know?
Yeah, no, it's wild. I mean, I don't know if I could do that with my ex-wife, current girlfriend thing, you know, like being around each other that long.
Yeah.
But I think it's because there's a commonality. It's like, you know, like not, it's like you're going to war, you know, you're all like in a, you know, that little thing, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Or Shaving Ryan's Privates.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's camaraderie. And, you know, again, it's not Dylan Sampson and the Dickheads behind you. It's the Drop Times. It's a band approach.
Yeah.
And that's what I've always wanted. And, yeah, we can irk each other, but I don't think we've ever had, like, a massive fight.
No.
Just, I don't know. There's a lot of weird, funny shit that happens.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely created our own little ecosystem.
Yeah, there's a little culture going on.
You know, like any
good old booger.
Like, you get your own little language going. Yeah. Like this is Johnny, but we all call him Josh, as you can see from the hat.
Oh, that's what the hat means.
He's branding. He's branding out. Yeah. He's growing his shit.
Yeah.
It's an energy drink he's working on.
I think we have that same hat, but it says Raise Rowdy on it.
Yeah. Nice auto trucker, baby.
Yeah.
It's branding's important, though, and I think you guys, just from the music, the branding you hear, right? I don't think a lot of bands need to be in front of a camera and fucking screaming about who they are, right? I think your guys' songs kind of speak for themselves in terms of sonic rebellion, almost, I would say, because it's like...
Dibs on that band name.
Yeah. but like, it just... It's bucking what is regular and what you've come to expect. And that's one of my favorite things. Like if I show you to another person that I think will enjoy it, is they just fucking smile in the midway through a song. Right. Or you hear one song and then the next song, you're like, wait, this is the same band.
Yeah.
But then you're then it kicks in, man. And you're like, oh shit. Yeah. So for me, that's the stuff that lives the closest to my heart because it's interesting. And
that means a lot, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah. It's just art is weird, right?
Yeah.
Because you never fucking know if someone's going to like it, if anyone's going to like it. But if it speaks to people, you know it's working. And your shit's speaking to people. Everyone I show it to likes it more. So that, in my head, the more ears that get on it, the more that's going to kind of bubble up. And
well, I hope it. I mean I'm happy with what we have so far, man. I'm like, what is Ray Wiley Hubbard, the days that I wake up and my gratitude exceeds my expectations, I have really good days.
Yeah.
And all these places and all these things that I've written off, you know, it's like, you know, some dumb kid that thought I knew better. Like even this town, you know, first time I came here, I was like, I was all dismissive. And then second time I came, I was like, nah, you know what? I was wrong. And like this third time, I was like, dude, there's a lot of good people here. This is a good spot. And I think it's if Austin cleaned up its act, that's what this town looks like. Like the homeless people here look like regular people in Austin. And it's clean, dude. The city's very clean comparative to Austin. I'm not talking shit about Austin. I guess I like the grungy atmosphere of it. Yeah. You know,
keep it
being
weird.
Terrified for my life.
Yeah. I'm afraid to live here. Yeah.
And I was on a scooter with my little cousin. He'd never been to Austin before. And he goes, Connor, are we in the ghetto? I'm like, nah, dude, we're in downtown, brother.
We're good.
Yeah. Just scoot around them.
Yeah.
Scoot around the tent.
I lived in Pittsburgh, and I lived in what's like the north side, which is kind of where the stadiums are, but the part I lived in wasn't the best area. And the lady two doors up OD'd, and I was like, good, I can afford rent again next
year. Oh, my God.
You know? Like, sick, you know?
God, I was hungry, thank God.
It's better than get someone shooting up here, you know?
I went and got lunch with my buddy Brett, and I came home, and I was unlocking my front door, and I look, you know, it's like my porch, and I can see my neighbor's porch, and you can just look down and see all the porches. Two or three porches down, a literal body bag was coming out of this house. On a stretcher. I was like, oh, fuck.
Was damn. That here?
Is it in East Nashville, yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, and we're just like, oh, my God. Some chick just OD'd, like, in her room.
Crazy. Oh, dude. Yeah. That's awful.
Horrible. Yeah. Scary, but you just said that just popped my head. So I'm like, Nashville's not as great, you know, as...
No, there's it's everywhere.
Oh, yeah, that shit's going around like a bad bug, dude. Like, I mean, that fentanyl stuff ain't nothing to fuck with.
No, and that's, I mean, I don't know enough about that to really speak heavily on it, but I didn't know people were doing fentanyl on purpose. I thought it was just something that was getting mixed in with other things.
I don't know. I mean, it is definitely getting mixed in with other things, like especially coke. But I've lost a couple close people to that stuff. But then I look at, you know, the toxicology report, and I go, oh,
yeah.
I don't know if the fentanyl did it, dude. Yeah. There was a lot on here. A
little bit of everything. Yeah. It's a weird time for sure. I mean, you know, just
it's called narco-terrorism, dude.
Yeah.
So it's insane.
Dibs on that band name.
Yeah. It's a dude, like my hometown. I grew up in southwestern Pennsylvania, about an hour south of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And when I grew up, it was all right. It wasn't great, you know, but there was factory jobs, and you know, my dad worked at a glass factory, and he provided well for us.
Yeah.
And then all of the factories closed down.
Yeah.
You know, and then the best jobs are school teachers or hospital workers.
Yeah.
You know, in the entire town. Those are the top paying jobs. You know,
that's happening where I grew up right now.
Yeah.
Southern Oklahoma, Southeast Oklahoma. I mean, it's not a lot to do. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you work for the tribe. We had like a Michelin tire plant.
Yeah.
Which is closing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of worried for it. I mean, it's already got some rough characters, but you know, once those jobs leave, man,
it's tough.
It's like that James McMurtry song, "Can't Make It Here Anymore."
Yeah. You know? Yes, very much.
So, yeah, it is. It's sad.
It's one of those weird things where, I mean, that's the cycle of everything. If somewhere's popping up, somewhere's going down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And whether that's in the U.S. or whether that's country to country, you know what I mean? It's a big world now that you can get everywhere pretty quick, relatively speaking, to our history, you know? So, but the things that fix broken people or people that are down on their luck are music.
Yeah, you know? Music, comedy.
Yeah, yeah, the arts, you know? Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, it's more important now than ever for great art. And we're not getting good movies anymore.
No.
We're just not, you know?
That's so heartbreaking.
It is.
I think the last five movies, because, you know, like, we're on the road, there's not a whole lot to do. Mm-hmm. When you have downtime, it's either bowl or watch a movie.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of bowling. But, man, bowling the last five movies we walked into.
Trash.
There was one that it was so gross. The subject matter and the lighthearted play on it, man, I wanted to walk out. What was that one? Don't Blink.
Don't Blink, yeah.
Ugh, dude, that was a nasty, nasty movie.
I find it hard that you would be moved that way by something.
You know, I mean, look, I've done a lot of fucked up shit.
That's what I'm saying.
I've not done anything close to that. I mean, it's just...
It was fucking dark, dude.
Yeah, it was dark, and then also, like, I'm a massive, massive like conspiracy theorist guy. I have been for a long time. And
your face right now is just like, oh boy, where are we going with this?
How much time do we have?
I'm not like, I mean, I can get into Sasquatch and stuff, but I'm talking about like just, you know, the subtleties and like, so I'm watching that movie and I'm paying attention to all the, you know, again, brushstrokes that they're putting in there intentionally. Why are they putting that in there? And it's very, that was a very Epstein Island type of movie, of thing.
Yikes.
And again, it just made me feel really uncomfortable. And we had some girls there with us too, and they were just about as grossed out. I mean, like, it was a bad, bad movie. And then what was the other one?
Is that weird? That makes me want to like see it just to know what the fuck y'all are talking about.
Yeah, I mean, go watch it. But the acting is just, it's just trash.
Okay.
But yeah, you're right. There's
and
no,
then there's
no
like Garfield 5, you know.
I probably would have rather
watched
that.
Watch those brushstrokes, yeah.
It turns out Garfield's a pedophile.
Yeah. Fuck. Garfield Island.
Oh, boy.
No, but it, in my opinion, because shit like that's weird, right? Mm. And like you see, in my head, after being a little bit in the music industry, I'm like, well, probably no one wants to make the mistake that costs them to not get another movie to make, right? Or not get put on that next set.
Mm.
And I feel like sometimes in music we have that, but it's cheaper to make a fucking song than it is to make a movie, yeah. You know? So like you could make a song with great production, and even if you have a crazy producer, it's not nearly the budget of what a movie is,
right,
you know?
Right.
So you can explore a little bit more and hone in on stuff that is still great. Whereas, like, I mean, a third Iron Man, whatever, you know? Yeah. I'm going to watch
like
it.
Like a Saving Private Ryan, for example, which is like an incredible movie.
Incredible movie.
Yeah.
Or, like, my favorite movies from my childhood are fucking weird. Like Fight Club, right?
Yeah,
I didn't watch the book before I saw it. So it just, like, unlocked my brain a little bit. And even Pulp Fiction.
There's no good comedies anymore.
No.
There's not.
No, there's not, man.
Well, because everybody's too afraid. It's all
get
nutless.
Canceled. Yeah.
But, man, I watched Uncle Buck the other day. Mm-hmm. I used to grow up watching that movie. I was like, whoa, dude. This is such a like a heartfelt American masterpiece of a great family friendly movie. And like, it's like I want to start buying these DVDs. That way, you know, my family can watch these same things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want all that, you know, waiting. Road trip. I'm getting all these DVDs because I want my like 9-year-old kid to like stumble upon and like steal them and hide them and watch it. You know, and fast forward to certain scenes. You know,
My buddy Keller's doing that. Him and Sarah's wife are buying DVDs so that they can have their kids can have that. They don't have kids yet, but when they do have kids, they can have that experience.
Yeah.
So they have all their favorite movies and DVDs to show their kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I was doing that on VHS with my buddy Clayton, dude, and we had a little TV about this little Magnavox. I'd just be staring at that bubble, you know, just waiting for that one shower scene road trip.
Oh, yeah.
They were naked. Yeah. Really naked. Why? She like interrupts the story. It's my
story.
That's
why you want to become a musician so you can go on a road trip.
Yeah
exactly.
We're on the eternal.
The eternal road trip.
Yeah. So we just say that it's a 30-year-old summer camp.
Yeah. Feels that way a lot of times, if you're lucky.
Yeah. We actually have a summer camp joke. So when it was COVID and all of the, well, I guess it's not a joke, just stuff we did. Well, COVID and you couldn't be together, but you could be outside 30 people, which makes no fucking sense, but whatever.
Yeah.
There was no festivals, and that's like kind of what our crew would do. We'd go to like a festival or we'd go to CMA Fest in town and just all fuck off and probably drink too many beers more than anything. But, during COVID, we did what we called Raise Rowdy Summer Camp, which was just all of our crew that would normally go to a festival. And then we had like four of our musician buddies come up and paid them some and just had like a field party, basically.
Nice.
But dude, that you don't realize till a time like that when it was gone how much those music moments mean. Not just the music, too. Like I can listen to my music at home.
Yeah.
But having those experiences with other like-minded people.
Yeah.
You know, that's what music does. It brings folks together.
Yeah.
No,
so that was our summer camp.
We were pretty lucky. The part of Texas that we live in, COVID really wasn't much of a concern.
especially in like at House Passion in Conkey. I remember when they were like, all right, everything's shut down. And then Harper, my uncle, he's like, no, we're gonna barrel through it. And they had John Wolfe play, and then we went to go open up for him. And we were so excited, man. I got hammered drunk, did an awful job.
Oh, boy.
My uncle got so pissed off. And then we played again the next night. It wasn't like we were still playing, like not nearly at the rate in which we were or we are now.
Yeah.
But and it was still few and far between. But yeah, that was a miserable, miserable time. I think, I mean, obviously for everybody. But
once you got south of Austin, it was pretty wide open.
Pretty regular.
Yeah. Like the bar that we would go to in New Braunfels never shut down.
The Moonshine.
Moonshine. It was just like
packed, wall to wall, dude.
Wall to wall. And like a week later, you'd be like, oh yeah, so and so got COVID. Like, oh, she was there that night. So, I can still taste. I guess I'm good. You know?
Yeah, weird times, but. I'm sorry for bringing that back up, honestly. Yeah. COVID, fuck COVID. But just speaks, in my opinion, to the power of not just music, but the people together,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. You know? It's fun to be with your friends.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, like, you know, I know a lot of these bands that people don't care for, but they're going to go because it's going to be a party. Mm. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, well, I'm not a big fan of this, but, they're, you know, my girlfriend and her friends are going, and they love it, so we're going.
Yep.
And that's good enough, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it still works. So, yeah, he's creating a reason for someone to go out and you know, get out of their house. Stop acting like a weirdo, you know?
Yep.
Because I think that, you know, between just that and an iPhone, most people feel happy just on their Xbox and stuff, just staying at home.
And you know? Eats.
Yeah, well, exactly. You got to find an excuse to go live, kiddo.
Yeah,
that's one thing too that's kind of unique to where, you know, we come from, is that on a Saturday night, people are out going to do something. Like,
yeah,
even the older generation, like there's dance halls all over Texas, that there's a culture built around that, you know, and it's like
good river culture.
Yeah, good river culture. I mean, like there's great rivers that people during the summer, if the river's up, they're there.
Yeah. It's dove season right now. Yeah. That's another massive social event.
Yeah, so
you know, it's all three things that tie that together too.
Yeah, very alcohol. Thankful. Yeah, come up, you know, in that culture, and honestly, I've seen an uptick in, like, you know, people going to shows, like live music. I feel like you know, it's just now kind of recovered after COVID, where it's back up. Like,
Hopefully, these kids they have a little bit of animosity. And they're doing it out of, you know, like, spite.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go out because you locked me up for 2 years, you know?
Well, like, you know, one of our biggest fan bases is in Lubbock, Texas, which has been, honestly, like, our springboard has been Blue Light in Lubbock. That's our second home. There's a culture in that town where kids go out and see live music.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know if it's... You know, Lubbock is kind of like an island out there on its own. There's not much to do. Band comes to town, everyone's there.
Yeah.
You know? And you get that, those pockets around, you know, College Station's that way, San Marcos, New Braunfels. Yeah, I mean, even in Oklahoma, Stillwater is like that. Tulsa's like that. Yeah, no, it is. It's great to see that the younger kids are really into live music.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, it feeds the soul, man, and I think you realize it a little bit more when it was gone for a minute.
For sure,
We, you know, as a company that talks about music, it was a fucking weird time, you know?
Yeah,
We had live streams, but a live stream's it's not a live show.
No, it's weird.
It has an element of it, has a little bit, but it's just not the thing that makes 3,000 people get together in the same room, you know?
I remember, I think I tried to do one. And I was sitting there. I was like, "What the fuck?" I turned it off.
That's super on brand, though. Honestly,
what am I doing here?
You're like, "Fuck all this noise."
Just gonna get a job.
That's what I was. I'd become a task rabbit, dude.
Yeah, dude. I was a milkman.
Jesus,
it's crazy. Literally.
Yeah, I was a milkman during COVID. Johnny was worked at
doing DoorDash.
Yeah,
I was doing task rabbit.
What is that?
It's like where people like hire a handyman to come over and like hang up your TV. And it was really good and awesome because no one there knew how to do anything. I mean, this one guy came, I had me come over to his house, and it's all tech people, you know? They're all savvy to that software and stuff. Mm-hmm. This guy came, so I need to put this table together. And I went, I was there for like, I don't know how I can milk this to make it seem like I did something, but he literally just didn't know to pop in the little springs, you know, like you do with like a canopy or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was so embarrassed that I did it so quick that he like wanted to get his money back. I was like, dude, I don't know what to tell you. It goes through the app.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of stuff like that, and a lot of hanging up TVs, a lot of furniture assembly. But yeah, I remember I had to do like, there's this fulfillment, like clothing company deal, and I had to set up like 100 massive like clothing racks, and it took me forever. I took like a little break, and then this lady's running around. She goes, "Where's the rabbit?"
No,
I was like, I'm a rabbit's here. I felt so stupid, dude.
That's wild.
Yeah. But.
There's something to have in a job that sucks so bad, though, that everything else is fine, right? Yeah, yeah. Like, if you have a really shitty job, then you're like, well, this isn't that bad.
It makes the beer taste better.
Yeah,
it does. It makes it taste so much better.
I did a lot of construction growing up, and I was in the oil field for a couple of years. But I used to work with a lot of good Mexican guys, and this one Mexican guy, after a long, hot day working, he got a Bud Light, and he opened it up, and he went, "This beer tastes better than other days."
Yeah. Those are good days, though.
Yeah, and I was like 16 years old. I had a sip of that Bud Light, and I was like, this is really refreshing, you know? And then I was like, why don't I always do manual labor while drinking beer? Yeah. And now it's like my spinach. Yeah. It's the only way I can do it. Yeah. I'm not mowing the lawn unless I do 6 beers.
Yeah. It's
as you should.
There is something about that hot day beer, the first one.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the first time I had beer when I was a kid, and I was like, what the fuck is going on with this? Like, I don't understand it. Like, it tastes like this for everyone, you know?
It tastes like electricity or something.
When you're not used to it, you know?
Oh, man.
And then once you have, a couple, it's like olives. The first time I had an olive, I was like, I don't get it. And then I remember when I got it. I worked at a restaurant where I was making salads, and so like I just would pop an olive, and I didn't even like them. I would just do it, kind of, you know. And then I was like, "Oh, I actually like these now." And I feel like that's,
you got to find the taste for it.
Yeah, the way like I got
drinking
with
black
beer.
Coffee the first time, or drinking beer, whiskey, or fentanyl or whatever. You know,
gotta get a tolerance.
Mix it all in there. Yeah. That's a good toxicology report.
Yeah, no shit.
But it's. Music for me has always been that thing, you know.
Yeah.
So
what do y'all got coming up before we wrap this up? You guys anything you want to pitch?
As far as tour goes, we're this will be out before exit in. Friday we're in Athens, Georgia, at 40 Watt with Old 60.
That's sick.
And we deadhead across the country to Fort Collins, Colorado. We'll be there with Old 60. And then we're in Denver with Old 60. And then we are in Colorado Springs with Oscar Blues. That's our own show.
Yeah.
Then we come back to Texas. We'll be in Midland the 3rd of October.
Damn, you got this memorized.
Yeah. We'll be in Lubbock.
Oh, shit. I got to look it up.
We'll be in Lubbock, Texas on the 4th at the Blue Light. And then we'll be in Amarillo at the Golden Light on the 5th. Yeah.
Well, hell yeah.
Thank you boys so much for coming out here.
Thank hell yeah, man. This has been awesome.
Playing that show. Funny enough, Old 60's first show in Nashville is that same room before it was torn down and redone.
Right. Wasn't that their first show in general or no?
If it wasn't, it was like 2 or 3. Wow. They had 3,000 monthly listeners then.
Damn.
Yeah, so it's cool to see those boys getting to live their dream too, man.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So
that's about where we were last year this time.
So. Yeah, sick. So, well, thank you all so much for being here.
Yeah, man. Thank you guys.
And keep kicking ass, man. I can't wait to see a full set.
I appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for your
deal. All right, bud.